This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. Fellas, you've heard the phrase, look good, feel good, right? But why not add smell good to that too? That's where Sterling Soap Company comes in. First, Sterling Soap is 100% natural and has a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne. Second, there's a scent just for you. How about burgundy? Yeah, it's more than a color. The Sterling Soap folks blend natural essential oils with hints of mahogany, golden amber, and sandalwood. Or how about D503, an intensely masculine scent inspired by Legend by Mont Blanc. And third, you will feel good about the price. For just a little more than you'd pay at the grocery store, Sterling Soap will leave you feeling clean, refreshed, and ready for whatever's next. Give Sterling Soap a try today. Visit sterlingsoap.com. This day in sports history. It's April 6th, and on this day in 1958, Arnold Palmer won his first major, and the world of golf was changed forever. Palmer was a fresh-faced 28-year-old playing in the Masters. This was his fourth year on the PGA Tour, and he had 8 wins under his belt, but he was still looking for his first major title. He'd had some good days at Augusta National, finishing in the top 10 twice in his 3 attempts. On this day, Palmer started the day tied for the lead with Sam Snead after a third-round 68. But that final day at the Masters was played different than it is now. On this day, Palmer, as the leader, went out several hours before the final group of the day and was paired with Ken Venturi, who had been the leader after the first 2 rounds. Something else to know, the weather had been wet. A thunderstorm had passed through the night before, and the deluge of rain left the golf course a boggy, soggy mess. That nearly postponed the final round, but instead, they decided to play it. And the weather played a role in this one with some controversy. Now, the rules on the day, since it was so wet on the course, allowed for lift clean in place. So coming to the par 3 12th with a one-shot lead, Palmer hit his tee shot long into the bank behind the green. Venturi had done the same thing, and his shot had bounced back on the putting surface, where he was able to two-putt for par. But Palmer's ball was plugged. It was embedded in the ground. Speaking with a rules official at the hole, Palmer was told he had to play it as it was. Palmer chopped at the buried ball and moved it a foot and a half. He ended up making a 5, but Palmer knew the rules, and so instead of going to the next tee, he went back to the spot where his tee shot landed, placed his ball as he would have if he had actually followed lift clean in place, hit his second, and then tapped in for a 3. But which could he put on his scorecard? A 3, and he still had a one-shot lead. A 5, and he trailed by 1. It wasn't until several holes later when tournament founder Bobby Jones told Palmer that he was correct and had parred the 12th. Coming to the 18th, Palmer felt like he needed a birdie to secure the win, but a 3-putt left him with a bogey 5 instead for a final round 73. And now he had to wait and wait. He waited more than an hour for the final group to come to the 18th. Both Fred Hawkins and defending champ Doug Ford needed birdies to tie Palmer. But neither could do better than par to finish a shot back. It was Palmer's first win at a major and the first of 4 green jackets he would win in his career. So, why did this change golf? Well, while golf had great champions like Jones and Byron Nelson and Ben Hogan, among others, this was the era of television. More and more homes were adding them, and the charismatic Palmer was perfect to bring the game to the masses. And couple that with the rivalry that would soon emerge with Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player, coverage of golf began to flourish, and a lot of people around the country, both men and women, took up the game. Arnold's army grew in great numbers after his win on this day in the 1958 Masters. Interesting fact, the 58 Masters is also when the term Amen Corner originated. Sports Illustrated's Herbert Warren Wind coined the term in his article about the final day's action at the 11th, 12th, and 13th holes. Also on this day in 1896, the modern Olympics was born in Greece. It was the opening ceremony to not only revive the ancient games, but also to commemorate the 75th anniversary of Greece's independence from Turkey. A total of 13 nations were represented. Outside of Europe, there wasn't a lot known about these games, but the United States did manage to send the largest contingent of athletes. But funny thing, the Americans almost did not make it to the start. Travel in 1896, yeah, was a bit slow. Obviously, no transatlantic flight. Heck, we're still, more than 7 years before the Wright brothers would take flight in North Carolina. So the U.S. team took a steamer ship to Europe, but they thought the games started on the 18th. When they arrived in Naples, Italy on the 1st, they thought they had plenty of time when they found out they only had 5 days to make it to Athens, and panic hit. Fortunately, they did make it to the opening ceremonies just hours before the start. They were a bit tired and ragged. The first gold medal of the modern Olympiad was won by an American. James Connolly won the triple jump with a distance of 45 feet. Interestingly, Connolly was a student at Harvard until the university would not grant him a leave of absence to compete in the games. He quit school and went anyway. Also on this day, in 1997, the St. Louis Blues' Craig McTavish retired from hockey. McTavish, who played with the Bruins, Oilers, Rangers, Flyers, and Blues in his 17-year career, holds the distinction of being the last hockey player in the NHL to play without a helmet. When the rule was passed June 1, 1979, mandating helmets, players already on NHL rosters were grandfathered in and could choose to play without one if they signed a waiver. Fun fact, McTavish actually played with a helmet early in his career with Boston and later on in Edmonton when it wasn't required. In 1973, New York Yankee Ron Blomberg holds the distinction of becoming the first designated hitter in Major League Baseball. When he stepped to the plate on this day, he drew a bases-loaded walk in the first against Boston's Louis Tiant, but the Yankees lost 15-5 to the Red Sox on this day. The DH rule had been adopted by the American League in January for a 3-year trial period. However, the DH had actually been proposed nearly 7 decades earlier. Famed Philadelphia Athletics manager Connie Mack proposed it in 1906, but it didn't really start gaining momentum until the late 60s. And speaking of the Yankees, in 1982, opening day was canceled at New York's Yankee Stadium due to a blizzard dumping more than a foot of snow on the city. It actually canceled the first 3 games, and they didn't play their first home game until the 11th. And today's non-sports, did you know? Moments before he was fatally shot, President William McKinley gave away his good luck charm. That's all for today, and hey, I know I say this a bunch, but sometimes a call to action takes a while for folks to, take action. So if you have a moment, go ahead and get your kind act of the day out of the way and give a 5-star review and leave a comment about the show. It really does help. Okay, that's it for now. I'll be back tomorrow with more This Day in Sports History. This has been an original Thrive Suite production.
Hey there, Sports History fans. We've got some exciting news to share with you. 6 of our podcasts from the Sports History Network have made it to the final round of voting for the prestigious Sports Podcast Awards. Here are their shows and the categories. Historically Speaking Sports and This Day in Sports History are both competing for Best Sports Talk Podcast. No Nonsense Old School Weightlifting History is in the running for Best Fitness, Health, and Well-Being Podcast. When Football Was Football is up for Best Sports Documentary Podcast. Wrestling with Heels On has entered the ring for Best Wrestling Podcast. And Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing is fighting for the title for Best Combat Sports Podcast. Now, of course, we need your help to take home the championship for each of these awesome shows. All you gotta do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/vote, cast your vote for your favorite shows, or better yet, all 6 of them. Again, every vote counts, and we got to show the world how much sports history really matters. So thank you for your support and making Sports History Network the headquarters for sports yesteryear. But again, don't wait. You got to go vote now. That's over at sports historynetwork.com/vote.